VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Ruck is back for another year, but how much rugby will there be over the next few weeks and months is another question indeed. How many COVID cancellations do there need to be before Premiership Rugby decides on a possible circuit breaker? Should we shift the Six Nations? And is it time to admit that there's no way that the Lions Tour can go ahead as planned this summer? I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and joining me today are Stephen Jones, Alex Lowe and Adam Hathaway. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning. To
unfortunately, we're going to start with this coronavirus crisis and really start with the biggest story of the weekend, which is around the British and Irish Lions Tour. We understand an official decision is expected by the end of February, but can a Lions Tour realistically go ahead this year with little prospect of fans being able to travel? Jonesy, I'm going to start with you because you look like you've been burning the midnight oil for the last 4 or 5 days on this particular subject. I mean, I guess for our listeners, it's pretty simple, isn't it? You either cancel the tour altogether. It's either postponed until possibly the autumn or for another year until next year, which obviously causes complications with the World Cup, etc. Or that it's played, but not necessarily in South Africa, possibly played in the UK or another destination if it's safe to do so. And I guess that's probably the first message. We're on about safety and security of everyone involved. But what's your take on it? Because you've been talking to to various people across the weekend.
Yeah, it would have been nice if they'd have made that announcement about possible postponement, etc., before we'd done 5 pages on it, Lawrence, and then had to really go nuts and make some changes. But look, the thing is, the virus is at a peak here and in South Africa. The driving force behind the Lions announcement on Saturday was that promised vaccination program in South Africa has totally failed to begin. My opinion is that you said quite rightly that they're going to make a decision before February. I think it's going to be a lot sooner than that, because I think now they are alive to the possibility of putting it back 1 year, which I think is easily the best. 35,000 people want to go. They deserve to have the chance. The players deserve to have the chance of being Lions in South Africa with the Lions. Then you have in play the possibility of putting the Six Nations back this year until at such time as the fans can be there. Simple as that. I think the idea of playing it up here would have some merit if only we knew the fans could definitely come. The fans must be there, in my opinion, and I'm happy that the Lions agreed with that.
If it was to be delayed by 12 months, does that not cause complications with World Cup qualifications for 2023? And how do you think that sits with the clubs?
Yeah, there are so many complexities involved in this decision. And what is a concern to those of us who believe in the Lions and love the Lions is that up until now, the Lions' voice and the global picture has been muted by the unions and by the club game. And the Lions now really have to stand up for what they are and what they represent.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I agree with Steve that the only option, if they cannot play it this summer with fans, which to me, you know, I'm no epidemiologist, but to me it seems impossible that they can be sure enough early enough that can happen, because as you say, we've got a spike in cases in this country. I wrote last week that there were problems brewing because the cases in South Africa had rocketed past a million. There are no flights from South Africa to the UK at the moment, and the Foreign Office advised against travel to the country. So with that backdrop and the need to make a relatively early decision within the next few weeks, I don't see how it happens this summer. So then you're looking at the contingencies. And I'm with Jonesy. The only one that makes sense to me is to move it to next summer, 2022. This autumn theoretically works, but there's no way you'd get the Premiership clubs buying into a nine-week international window this autumn. Next summer, they would buy into it because they wouldn't have the issues of this summer. They can flip it. But the issue the Lions will have, and this is where I'm really interested and where I come back to my point about the Lions' voice, is how they convince the unions, or perhaps mainly the RFU, that next summer is the right time to do it, rather than try and fudge a solution. Because I don't believe having it in this country does the Lions any favours whatsoever. We all buy into the emotional value of what the Lions is, which is a touring team that's thrown together and goes around the world and tries to beat the best in the world. Hosting it here might work once as an emergency, but you strip away so much of the mystique, and that mystique has not only emotional value but commercial value to the Lions, that I think it would be short-sighted to host it in the UK. The problem with hosting it in South Africa in 2022 is that Eddie Jones will hate the idea. Eddie Jones will
see... That's not a problem. That's a bonus for it.
It's a problem in getting it over the line. And that's my point about Ben Calverley will have to negotiate with the RFU. And this is where it's about who's got the loudest voice, because the Lions board has representatives from all the unions. Bill Sweeney is RFU chief executive. He's also on the Lions board. Where do his priorities lie? Are his priorities with Eddie Jones and what I suspect would be England's position, which is they don't want a Lions tour a year out from the World Cup, because they'll supply half the squad and they will believe there's a fatigue factor, post-Lions fatigue factor. I'm not certain that that's the case. I think Ireland, as was pointed out to me by someone within the Lions recently, Ireland played brilliantly after the last Lions tour. So it isn't necessarily a knock-on effect that if you go on a Lions tour, you then play terribly. But Eddie Jones will not want that.
If the Lions tour goes ahead, summer of 2022, then clearly all other international tours become somewhat of a development tour rather than a full international tour. And I think there has to be unilateral kind of agreement or unilateral kind of rules and regulations around which players are then picked for those particular tours, so that one nation doesn't get a distinct advantage over another when it comes to the World Cup the following year.
Part of me thinks that, because obviously Eddie and I think all national coaches would be against having a Lions tour in 2022. Part of me just thinks, just give it to South Africa in 2025.
Well, and cancel it.
Yeah.
Sorry, look, the unions cannot have it both ways, Lawrence. They have shrunk the Lions tour down to a bare minimum. Don't tell us. I mean, a large number of people on the Lions tour, when you look at it, they are going to play probably, some are only going to start one or two games maximum. The idea that a mini Lions tour, and don't forget, it's not a year later. The Lions tour will be in July and the World Cup is not until September. So there's a 15-month gap. So this thing about the Lions tiring everybody out is a feeble excuse which past coaches have made for being a crap team.
I mean, I understand the various different positions of say clubs, unions, and the Lions themselves. But the one thing we've perhaps overlooked a little bit, we're looking at fixtures and schedules and opinion. But surely with the financial pressures that are coming on the club game, there's talk about. If this coronavirus carries on for another few months, that one or two Premiership rugby clubs will be under serious financial pressure and could even go out of business. The RFU themselves and all the other unions are under enormous financial pressure. They face the prospect of another round of international matches with no crowds, albeit the Six Nations. And obviously we know how much of a cash cow the British and Irish Lions are. Is there not some sort of way of bringing everyone together? And I hate to use this word, but where financial necessity will drive the decision-making process rather than common sense necessarily.
Well, of course it will. Welcome to the real world. I think Arthur touched on it in the paper last week, the possibility of playing the Six Nations this summer, because they'll be desperate to get some crowds into that. Playing the Six Nations with no crowds is just anathema, to be honest. the unions be desperate to get some crowds. I think what Arthur wrote in the paper last week about possibly playing this summer, that'd be eminently sensible.
None of this is straightforward, but I would say all of it's doable. I think, Lawrence, your point about it being a financial decision, it inevitably will be. And I guess my slight concern slash cynicism is that the unions have, as we said earlier, paid sort of scant regard to the Lions for a long time until they suddenly get the chance to host some Lions test matches in the UK. And I suspect they may well be driving that. Well, I don't know, but I suspect they may well be driving that option, whereas rather than the postponement option, because it'll give them a chance for income that they hadn't foreseen and that they obviously much need.
Well, the other thing I think is that everyone talks about this word unprecedented times, and we are in an unprecedented situation, which, let's be honest, keeps changing every day, every week, every month. You know, one country looks better placed with a vaccine and a you know, mass testing versus another country. And I just wouldn't rule out the possibility of a Lions tour going ahead, just not as we know it, that's all. Now, I know that is not everyone's cup of tea. I know it's not a Lions tour, as we've all come to know and love it. But, you know, I think we have to think outside the box in these unprecedented times.
I just think we can't know early enough whether we can have full stadia in this country in the summer. So I think the starting point has to be you defer it to 2022. If we get down into next year and we're in the same position, which we may well be because we can't foresee the future, then for me it's a different conversation, because then it comes down to thinking outside the box or cancellation. And suddenly the idea of hosting these games somewhere else, whether it's the UK or Dubai or wherever, becomes more palatable when it's up against the option of cancellation. But for now, we're not that far down the road, and postponement, as we've seen with European Championships and with the Olympics, is possible.
You should remember that there is another aspect here when we're talking about finance, and that is Lions Tours bail out the three hosted unions. They kept the Australian Union from insolvency the last time they went there. Ditto New Zealand, where they make hundreds of millions for the national economy. And if we're going to talk about, yes, as Lawrence says, it's going to be financial, yeah. But let's remember that South African rugby will be completely down the toilet if the Lions don't go. That is the influence of the Lions and the power that they have. Let's not let people make excuses. And Lawrence, you made a good point. This cannot be sorted by World Rugby sitting there gobbing or the Six Nations sitting there gobbing. It can only be sorted with the South Africans, the Six Nations, World Rugby, the major club leagues, the three club leagues, all sitting around the same table.
The problem is, Steve, all the same suits sit on all the different committees.
Yeah, I know. Well,
what hat is Bill Sweeney wearing in that meeting when he's there on behalf of World Rugby, the RFU, and the Lions?
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not the only one. I'm not picking on him.
It's three lunches.
The only one.
Well, the other thing that coronavirus is affecting, of course, is not just the British and Irish Lions tour, which is a massive decision, but it does have bigger implications closer to home. As we know, a number of fixtures, I think four fixtures, have been cancelled in the last two rounds of Premiership matches. A number of fixtures have been cancelled in the European Heineken Champions Cup as well. And I want to ask the three of you, you know, do we think it's time for rugby to take a little break until COVID cases are under control? Or do you think that this point system that both Premier Rugby have devised, which is the current system for giving 2 points to the team adjudged to be at fault, even though we're trying not to blame anyone for Corona, and maybe 4 points for those who aren't at fault, is a fair system? Because it would seem like the European EPCR have come up with their own little calculations of giving 5 points to the team not at fault and no points for those who are. And it's causing a little bit of issue here. You know, have we got some, is it fair? Is it about the integrity of the competition? Are we way beyond that and there is no integrity and we've just got to be thankful that we've actually got sport on our TV screens and for people to actually watch?
I've got to be honest, Lawrence. During the Autumn Nations Cup, Fiji had 3 28-0 defeats. And then during the Champions Cup, there was the bonus try defeats if you were deemed to be at fault. And I was staggered when the first round of Premiership matches were called off to find out that they're going to do this 4-2 situation, because there's real scope for a bit of skullduggery there. if you don't fancy a game.
There's clearly at the moment you've got teams that have lost matches that have gained fewer points than other teams who have lost matches through Corona. And I mean, I think that's the issue. And at this moment in time, it's not really a problem. But I mean, I guess every owner, every club have signed up to that particular agreement. But as the season progresses and as the awarding of these points becomes much more emotive around playoff places, around European places, etc., then I think it will start to become much more of a talking point. And that brings me on to our next subject of, you know, whether the coronavirus will inevitably lead to ring fencing. What will happen to Saracens if the championship season can't go ahead? I, for one, am not against ring fencing one way or another at this particular moment in time. And I'll put it out there. Ordinarily, I would say when you look at the league as it stands at the moment and you've got Exeter fairly recently promoted team at the top, Bristol recently promoted team in second, Newcastle just promoted in third. That is a massive case to suggest that why the hell would you think about ring fencing the Premiership? But at this moment in time, with a very stark reality that three or four of those clubs, not those three or four, but three or four may well go bust, is there a need to ring fence the Premiership, certainly for a period of 12 months, 2 years, and then have a look at it again in 2 years' time? And my argument would be, if it saves the elite end of the game from going into complete meltdown, then I think it needs to be seriously considered.
There are so many anomalies this year, people getting points for not turning up, really. But I have to say that I think that the clubs, all of them, have really made great efforts to get these games on. And I wouldn't like to see anyone relegated just because they happen to be in a difficult COVID area. I would say that, first of all, that I think they should consider probably having no relegation this year, but that will give them 13 clubs for next year, because you can't suddenly say to Saracens, or indeed Ealing and the other good teams, in the middle of the season, sorry, lads, there's no promotion, because Saracens have set their team up especially for one season. So I would think that you've got to add the winning team to your plans, but probably for the sake of fair play, not have relegation this year.
There's no reason why you couldn't freeze things, ring fence and freeze things for a couple of years to allow these clubs, these wonderful clubs that Steve's talked about, to recover really from what has been to hell and back.
We've been talking about this for so long, this idea of pulling up the drawbridge or creating a structure where a club could only come up if they prove they're financially ready and have the facilities. It feels like now is the moment when those who want that to happen should really instigate it, because overall these owners and these clubs have invested so much into elite rugby in England that for one of them to go to the wall, to cease to exist because of the current situation would be desperate.
Yeah, true.
And it feels now that it has, for this year, certainly it has to be the only option. I saw arguments about, well, if you don't have relegation, you can't crown a champion either. I disagree with that, because at the top, there's a playoff system which was designed to smooth out some of the imbalances during a season in terms of England call-ups and such like. If there was a playoff down the bottom, you might have a different conversation, but there isn't. I would do away with relegation this season, because you could easily have teams down the bottom through no fault of their own. The reason they brought in the new points system was because they recognised that you can have an outbreak at your club through no fault of your own. So it was a way of trying to limit the impact of it. Rightly or wrongly, but that was the decision. And I happen to agree with the sentiment behind it. But it means that the worst teams could escape relegation because they get 4 points for games that someone else called off. The flip side is also the case, that a decent team could end up down the bottom. I would do away with relegation. The further complication is that we don't know for sure that the championship season will even happen. It's supposed to start in March, two conferences, but they don't yet have the funding through for a testing program. They don't quite know how to access that yet. And obviously the situation on the ground is with COVID is changing all the time. So that season may not even happen, in which case you may have to manufacture Saracens returning to the Premiership as one of the 13 members anyway. So certainly for this season, and maybe for a couple of years, as you were saying, Lawrence, to just secure the investment and the owners and the loyalty they've shown to elite rugby in England. It would just be desperate if one of them went to the wall because of this, when something could be done to prevent it.
The other interesting point I'd like to make on that is, if you look at two of the clubs that we're going to get onto in a second, Bristol and Newcastle, the two most recently promoted clubs from the Championship, there is an argument to suggest that if you relegate a side, and those two have both experienced that, that those clubs come back a lot better rugby clubs than they ever have been before. They're able to reorganise themselves. They're able to rebuild in a winning culture. And Pat Lamb and Dean Richards have done an absolutely outstanding job. Dean Richards, not for the first time, because, of course, he's done it with Harlequins as well. And they come back a lot better rugby club, a lot better players, and a lot better organisation than they were before.
The train is now approaching junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Should we talk about some actual rugby? That would be really quite nice, because we should probably crack on. And Hathers, if I start with you, because looking and listening to you, you look like the only one who's put some serious miles in this weekend and actually done.
I went to Bristol and Wasps, though.
Exactly. Well done. Well, listen, let's start with that game down at Ashton Gate. You were one of the lucky ones who got to go there. Bristol v Newcastle. Obviously, the two most recently promoted sides. I mean, give us an overview of the game. It, of course, finished 29-17 to Bristol, who were mounting a serious challenge to Exeter for the top four and for titles. But a word on Newcastle as well, who, under Dean Richards, I mean, you know, they've lost their unbeaten record, but they are by no means going to be fighting down the bottom end of the table this season by the look of things.
I thought that Newcastle were unlucky not to come away with anything from that game. They gave it a right old rattle against Bristol, who, I mean, Bristol aren't going away, but I don't think Newcastle are going away either. They're not going to be, I think I spoke to Dean afterwards, and A, he said he was disappointed not to come away with at least a point. I reckon they could be challenging for top four. They go, right, they've got a decent coaching team there with Walder and Nick Easter's there now, obviously, this sort of Dean Richards wannabe. But I think they'll have a proper crack. They'll be top six at least.
I think it's important to mention as well to our listeners that the incredible job that every club, and Stephen Jones has mentioned it already, every club is doing just to get these fixtures on. I mean, Bristol were without six first-choice front-row players. So six first-choice front-row players. Fortunately, they weren't shorn of the selection of Carl Sinclair, who actually proved to be the difference in the sides. He came off the bench in the second half and absolutely decimated the New Zealand.
And also, that kid Klosker, who played a hooker.
And you know, look, I love the way that that both these directors of rugby, Pat Lamb and Dean Richards, are going about their business, you know, mixing seasoned internationals, in Bristol's case, one or two superstars, with some of their academy players. Both understand the importance of that. George Klosker for Bristol, who's got a rich history of his family being involved in Bristol Rugby Club, made his first premiership start and was outstanding, man of the match, 19 tackles, scored a try. So, you know, Bristol almost had to change the way that they play to accommodate for their Corona casualties. But
Lawrence, terrific! It was a terrific game for a start, and Newcastle looked potentially the best Newcastle team that I've seen. And don't forget, they were top four a couple of years ago. And it is hateful that there are no fans, but the level of commitment that these guys, with, as you say, six and seven people missing, the level of commitment and skill is massively to the credit of the clubs and the Premiership. And I think Newcastle probably need a controller now. I think Toby Flood's probably just a little bit, not quite as quick as he was. I think they need a controller there. But you talk about George Klosker up front for a young lad up front for Bristol. What about Jamie Blamire, who was hooking for Newcastle, who looked like a real force of nature? I just think it was one of those games where the Premiership, you think, blimey, this league, under all the pressure, financial, COVID, is a bloody good league. It was a tremendous game.
I'm going to move on to the repeat of last season's Premiership final, Wasps against Exeter. Alex, other than watching your beloved Kansas City Chiefs, I'm assuming you've had time now to catch up with the proper sport, the real sport of rugby union.
First of all, of all the weekends in the NFL, this was the weekend I didn't need to watch Kansas City Chiefs because they'd already qualified in first place for the playoffs. They filled in their B team. Right.
They are like the Exeter Chiefs, basically, yeah, aren't they? That's what you're saying.
They filled in their B team. Yeah, and I think the point on Joe Launchbury is the one that I'd focus on. He spoke to him last week in the build-up to the game, and he talked a few times about the pain of losing that final to Exeter and how he actually was relieved to go straight into England camp. It hit him hard. If you remember, he was lying in the Wasps in goal area in heaving floods of tears after they lost that final. It meant everything to him. And I just think as a player, he has, this year, he's taken his game to another level, which, if I'm honest, I didn't know he had in him, simply because he's one of those players who is just so consistently good all the time. His level rarely drops, that I just thought we were seeing, this is Joe Launchbury, this is the player. But he talked of the influence of Lee Blackett, the influence of Matt Proudfoot in particular with England, and the focus on the physicality that he needs to bring. And he's a sort of a baby face. You know, he's got a baby face look. He's a gentle soul. He's a lovely guy. And I think sometimes people look at him and don't see how big and strong and heavy he is. And he hasn't always had that mentality to impose himself like that. But that is now coming through in his game. And Lee Blackett was gushing about him, talked about how emotional he gets talking about Joe Launchbury because of the player and the leader he is. And I just think he's been sensational for Wasps this year. And, you know, the heartbeat of everything that they're doing and the emotion of losing that final clearly came out for me at the weekend.
Let's move on to, I mean, well done, Wasps, and I'm sure Exeter will come back even stronger. So that's just a minor blip. But let's move down to Kingsholm, where Gloucester played Sale. And both of these sides were in desperate need of a win. Obviously, you know, new coaching team under Skivington and Alex King, the former Wasps, and Paul Deacon looking for his first victory as Sale kind of a DOR head coach, whatever he wants to call himself, post Steve Diamond. I mean, it wasn't a game without controversy, let's be honest. There were some wonderful tries. You know, Rhys Zammit scored an absolute cracker, and Sale kind of just, you know, through AJ McGinty sort of grounded out, and the game came to life in the last 10 minutes, really. Wonderful story. Josh Beaumont out for 15, 16 months with a horrific knee injury, was the guy who scored the winning try for Sale. But unfortunately, it wasn't him that got the headlines, because it was kind of slightly marred by an incident in the last couple of minutes, a Dan Dupree tackle, which somehow the TMO decided was okay. I can't quite work out how that happened. And then a rather off the pitch, unsavoury incident with the water boy and Billy Twelvetrees, who managed to have a little look at this.
Great story as it was when Josh Beaumont scored. He was helped over the line by Dan Dupree, who shouldn't have been on the pitch at the time. Absolute disgusting tackle. Not even a tackle. complete head knocker.
The problem is that they've allowed these things for too long. You're not supposed to go in on your own and smash people. And that was a particular, that, as Adam says, that was a particularly horrible one, and contributed to the unbelievable fact that Gloucester are bottom of the table. Yeah. But Lawrence, let's just get one thing straight. The water boy, he's an official water boy wearing an official water boy shirt. I'm afraid I've got no sympathy for him whatsoever, because if you are anyone on the touchline in an official capacity, you know 100% you are not allowed to touch the ball, because if you touch the ball goes dead and it can't be a quick throw in. And the water boy was completely and utterly out of order as Billy 12 Trees went to take a quick throw in. So the blame, in my opinion, was all one way.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think what doesn't sit very comfortably with any of us, and I would imagine with anyone watching, is that the Billy 12 Trees obviously was an overreaction. You push someone over like that, the water boy, you're going to get yellow carded. Water boy blatantly knew exactly what he was doing, picked up the ball. He quite rightly got sent to the stands, but then the penalty was awarded to Sale. So the actions of the water boy effectively won Sale the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what doesn't sit very particularly well with me. And that's something that needs addressing. I'm also, without wishing to be someone who moans, because, you know, there's only one man who moans on this pod, and it's certainly not me. But I think the actions of the water boys moving forward, Tony Spreadbury is very clear that there is a number of water boys permitted per side. I think it's five per team. And at the moment, we're seeing a whole army of water boys running on the field. They're not water boys, they're coaches. Let's be clear about that.
Yep.
They are not water boys. Alex Sanderson wears a vest and runs on the pitch. So they are coaches giving instructions and players messages. Now, we had about six or seven per team running on in the Gloucester game after 15 minutes. It was minus three. You surely don't need any water after 15 minutes. In a temperature of minus three. And I just think that it needs policing. You know, there's technical areas in a number of sports, NFL, in football. And I think the water boys need policing. The finishers, the substitutes, joining in celebrations in the in-goal area with teams that have scored. I think that needs policing, because there's going to be full-scale brawls before we know it. And it's going to be brought on by the fact that we're not regulating what's going on. So I think that certainly needs addressing. Now, I want to move on to the final game of the weekend, which was Leicester-Bath. And actually, whilst it maybe didn't conjure memories of traditional Leicester-Bath games, it actually served us up a wonderful match. Jonesy, you've probably covered more Leicester-Bath derbies, more Leicester-Bath games than any journalist I know.
It was a horrendous battle. It looked like two clubs who were normally used to being in the top four, Lawrence, and played as such. It was a tremendous battle. There was mostly power, but a lot of skill there. I think we've seen a great new carrier in Jasper Visa, the number eight. I thought that Leicester were convincingly the more powerful and the better in contact. We saw a nice new fullback, great new fullback, possibly in Freddie Stewart of Leicester. We saw Leicester using the mighty Ndolo everywhere. We also saw, I think, two other things in the defeated side. We saw in Zach Mercer, a guy, in my opinion, who was coming up the rankings at number eight. And we also saw, through the performance of Ben Spencer, the complete and arrant nonsense of Eddie Jones's selections at number nine. Because Ben Spencer is a wonderful rugby player, and he played really well, and he's so much better than some of the people who went to the World Cup with England. It's not true. So it was a full-blooded thing, and it looked like those two clubs are on their way back, and it's credit to both.
I was watching it early on, and Anthony Watson couldn't take a high ball, and I'm thinking, my God, all that talk of him as an England fullback, and he can't catch one. And then as the game went on, and I think it was Austin was highlighting the style of kicking that George Ford was doing and the spiral bomb that he was putting up. And it took me back to, I covered a Scotland tour in 2004 when Mick Byrne, the great kicking coach, great All Black kicking coach, was on the Scotland staff. And he took us out onto the training field and gave us a demonstration of all the different types of kicks he was trying to coach the Scotland backs. And there was the spiral bomb, there was the floater, which you kick in the middle of the ball sort of with it parallel to the ground. And honestly, I would back myself as being able to catch a catch a ball kicked in the air, obviously without a 20 stone forward herring down on me. And I couldn't get anywhere near them because they come down and about 10 yards above your head when you're under it, whether it's a spiral bomb or the floater, it just moves late in the air. And for all the talk we had in the autumn of too much kicking and everything, George Ford's execution of the kicking game was superb. And I thought the insight we got from Austin and an understanding of really why it was so difficult for Anthony Watson under the high ball because of the different style of kicks that he was putting
on. You're right. That sort of screw kick or the one that, you know, because every fullback knows where to position themselves for a big up and under like that. But the nature of those kicks is you think you're in the right position and then suddenly it's like a dying duck. It just sort of falls about two or three feet in front of you. And Johnny Wilkinson was an absolute master of that particular kick. The one thing that won't be happening this year in 2021, of course, is the Rugby Writers' Dinner. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by three of its former chairmen of this wonderfully esteemed club. Hathers, the Pat Marshall Award for, I guess, the person. I mean, it's kind of the real Sports Personality of the Year award, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some incredible nominations. Sadly, the dinner won't be taking place, but the awards will still go ahead. And you're Sport for Choice this year. Just give us a list of the nominees.
Well, I mean, the NHS is under pressure, enough pressure as it is without us having another dinner. But so the nominees this year are Rob Baxter, for obvious reasons. Nigel Owens, who refereed his 100th Test match. DuPont, the French scrum half, who was made us all smile with the way he played rugby. Dan Leo, who's done terrific work standing up for the South Sea Islanders and a brilliant documentary as well, which you can see on Amazon. And Alan Wynne-Jones, who beat Richie McCaw's record for the obviously, Arthur and I know who the winner is. If we told you, we'd have to kill it.
We'll reveal the answer when, Hathers, in
A couple of weeks. And just to put it into context, some of the past winners, Jonathan Davis, Dave Loveridge, some bloke called Delalio, Martin Johnson, Johnny Wilkinson, Brian O'Driscoll, Emily Scarrett. So it's quite an esteemed list.
We are going to bring back one of our regular features, which is Jones Moans. I mean, there's a whole list of things he could moan about this week. But Jonesy, what's really caught your eye?
Well, what caught my eye was I made a point of studying the four Welsh regions who all played on Friday. Scarlets played the Dragons, and at Cardiff, Ospreys played the Blues. It was just looking for signs of revival, Lawrence, amongst the Welsh clubs who've been so bad for so long. And really, the moan is there were so few signs. I mean, Scarlets and Newport and the Dragons were a very, very poor game. Why is every Welsh game taking place in the dead of night rather than in the sunshine or at least the light? We then went on to the game between the Ospreys, who did show stuff, did play quite well, and Cardiff, who again were poor. And when you think that three of the four clubs don't appear to be making any progress, it really, really does worry you. But possibly even more than that, you know, Welsh rugby in the eras of Ray Williams, John Dawes, these guys used to lead the game in terms of the lead they gave in coaching. I mean, the Australians will tell you that it was a Welshman, Ray Williams, who set up all their coaching structures. Now you've got the four Welsh regions and none of them are coached by a Welshman. I mean, and probably no Welshman deserved to be a coach there. And, the best team there, the Ospreys, coached by Toby Booth, which was a great coach, but Wales have lost their lead on the field and off the field. And to me, that is a crying shame. And it's very, very worrying for the next 5 years.
Well, there we have it. It's I couldn't disagree with a lot of what you just said there, Jonesy. We are going to move on to our final feature of the week, which is our God or Goddess of the week. And whilst, Jonesy, you get your breath back. Alex, we'll start with you, and it can't be Mahomes from the Kansas City Chiefs just yet. You've got another.
He had a week off.
You've got another.
We'll save that for a few weeks' time when he wins the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
So I like to name check Gerwyn Price, the former rugby player who won the World Darts title last night. I spoke to him a couple of years ago, and he's a great guy. Told me a story of when his rugby career came to an end at Wales Under 20. Played for Cross Keys, almost took up an apprenticeship as a plumber. His mate started a pub darts team, and that set him on the road to winning the world title last night. So definitely name check for him. But we touched upon Rob Baxter winning an OBE in the New Year's Honours, and I'd like to award my God of the Week to Matt Hampson for the same reason. Long overdue recognition for a guy who, on a personal level, incredible character and courage just to cope with his own situation, never mind do everything he's done to help other sportsmen, other people in similar circumstances. So, yeah, my God of the Week goes to Matt Hampson.
Adam, we move on to yourself. God of Goddess of the Week, please.
So we've had 9 months of government briefings, which tell us nothing. I just wish one bloke had been given us a government briefing, and that's Pat Lamb. Last week, the Harlequins game against Worcester got called off. Obviously, there might have been repercussions because Bristol had played them the week before. We had one of these dreaded Zoom calls with Pat, and before we'd asked the question, he walked in, explained the whole situation with complete and utter clarity. He said, we had a positive test on Monday. I've sent all the front rowers home, all six of them who played against Quinns. And basically, we didn't need to ask him another question. The guy's an absolute, he's just a straight talker. And all, you know, we're quite thick as journalists. All we need is someone to explain to us what's going on. And he does it brilliantly. And he's my God of the Week.
Jonesy, just as a tribute to the Premiership and the way these young lads are coming through, I think George Closker and Jamie Blamire, excellent. But I've got another one, and that's when he came to this country to join your club at a huge salary. Lima Sopoanga was seen as a usurper of Danny Cipriani. He was very unhappy and didn't play very often in his first season, didn't appear to be that committed. But I have to say that my God of the Week is Lima Sopoanga, because he has changed things around. He is clearly committed. He's clearly playing a part as a leader. He's at fullback. He's kicking good goals. He's taking a part in the action. And he looks like he's enjoying himself. So for having the humility to cop the bad times and for bouncing back, my God of the Week is Lima Sopoanga.
Well, it's very good of you to say that, Jonesy. I mean, I think he's played magnificently well. I would be, if I was training with him now as a professional player, I would be helping him to, you know, to learn how to tackle, though, because what I would say to him is that tackling is not optional, and he'd certainly be in Sean Edwards' remedial tackling group for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday until he learned to actually lay a finger on someone at fullback. But I do hear what you're saying. He did play a lot better, and great to see him particularly prominent in attack. And finally, I was going to go with Matt Hampton. I probably still would, actually, but equally, just to add to the list of welcome, and maybe, you know, some might say slightly controversial, but in my mind very deserving, was the award of an MBE to Damien Hopley. The Rugby Players Association is the union that represents the players, and it's much maligned occasionally. People knock it, but let me tell you this: as someone who has who's been on the receiving end of a little bit of unfair treatment in my time, I think the collective voice of the professional rugby players, it's been going for over 25 years now, represents 800 male and female rugby players. And when you need things like legal advice, personal professional development, insurance, education, you know, counselling, etc., the RPA has been there and will continue to be there. So I think for his service over 25 years, I think that was long overdue. So he is my God of the Week. Well done to Damien. Gentlemen, my thanks to Hathers, to Stephen Jones, to Alex Lowe. Whatever happens over the next 7 days, the Ruck will be back next Monday. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review. You can, of course, subscribe on Acast, iTunes and your usual podcast provider. Until next week.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.